Howdy, neighbors. This is Phil Hudak. Today is August 20th, 2020. This is Prove All Things number 12, which will concentrate on CDC data of COVID-19 deaths and frontline doctors. What did they have to tell us? Do you want your doctors under political control? Do you understand the vaccine plans to deal with COVID-19? This show airs on Channel 3, 6 o'clock, every Thursday, 6 p.m., and you can go to hudak.info, in which the Prove All Things programs are archived. You may have seen me around Elkins or other places in the county in my red Jeep, or maybe you just heard me. I'm trying my best to get uncensored information out. I'm not a doctor. However, I have taught all the sciences. I do have an open mind, and I have looked at this situation, the situation of vaccinations and related things. So, let me start out first looking at the CDC COVID-19 death counts. I'm going to show you information directly from the cdc.gov website. If you do a COVID-19 death counts search, you will find this site, which gives you daily updates of totals by week and state of the provisional death counts from or for the coronavirus 2019 or COVID-19. Scroll down through this website and look at what they have to tell us, what the CDC has to tell us about these deaths. What we see here on Table 1 is the deaths involving coronavirus by states for the weeks ending February 1st to August 15th, 2020, and it was updated on August 19th, 2020. In Table 2, we have, again, deaths involving coronavirus. This time by jurisdiction or by states, again from February 1st to August 15th. They explain here how to use the data, and they explain why numbers can be different depending on who you get the numbers from. But I think the important thing is in the middle here where it says states report at different rates. Currently, 63% of all deaths are reported within 10 days of the date of death. Now, if we go to weekly updates by, what we find is the weekly updates by select demographic and geographic characteristics. Again, this is for provisional death counts for coronavirus disease. In this chart, which is for all sex and for corona or COVID-19 deaths, we see the number of deaths charted all the way from February 1st, 2020 to August 8th, 2020. Look at the chart, look at the progression. And here we actually see the numbers. This is for the entire United States. 0 to 24. Deaths in that range, 0. 25 to 34, 3. 35 to 44, 9. 45 to 54, 17. 55 to 64, 62. 65 to 74, 89. 75 to 84, 131. And over 85 and over, 127. So you look at those numbers, you decide who's at risk, and what is currently reported by the CDC. Now we're going to look at the deaths for all causes, same periods, from February 1st, 2020 to August 8th, 2020. Look at the chart, look at the progression, and look at the numbers. This is all deaths now. 0 to 24, 80, 184. 25 to 34, 249. And you can see what the numbers are. Quite different from the COVID deaths. And if we compare the two, and I put them side by side, this is information that we need to know. If it's correct from the CDC, in order to decide what we need to do as a people, as a country, as a state, as a county. Look at those two numbers and make a decision or use this information to logically conclude what should be done. I'd like to remind you that in program 10, I believe it was, I exposed what the CDC says on infectious diseases. And here's the website that you can go to actually look at this extensive 1,000 plus page document from the CDC, in which pages 833 to 1,060 concentrated just on emerging infectious diseases. It's a peer-reviewed journal tracking and analysis of disease trends. And in the conclusions, again, this is from the CDC, concerning face masks. Quote, we did not find evidence that surgical type face masks are effective in reducing laboratory-confirmed influenza transmission, either when worn by infected persons, source control, or by persons in the general community to reduce their susceptibility. However, as with hand hygiene, face masks might be able to reduce the transmission of other infections and therefore have value in an influenza pandemic when healthcare resources are stretched. So, very important. What's going on? What's the CDC telling us? What do we do with this information? As my dad used to say, especially when he got mad at me, Philip, God gave you a brain. Use it. So, there you go. We have to take responsibility, not just for ourselves, but we are our brother's keepers. And we have to decide what is it that God would have us do. Okay, at this point, I'm going to have several clips, very important clips, of frontline doctors and doctors warning about the upcoming vaccination with information that you need to know to make those important decisions.
In this time, it is important that heroes step forward, that fearless leaders courageously stand in the public eye. Even if the flames are being lit below their feet, they stand in the truth and they speak the truth. One of those brilliant heroes in this country is a senator and a doctor named Scott Jensen, who was out telling the truth to the people as a senator and even more importantly as a doctor, saying, you know, there's things that are going on with this COVID-19 pandemic that you should know. Here is what his campaign across social media and mainstream media looked like.
My next guest is a doctor and state senator in Minnesota who is deeply troubled by the CDC's latest guidance for counting COVID deaths. Dr. Scott Jensen joins me now.
I spent some time earlier today just going through the CDC's manual on how to complete death certificates and the parts that were specifically written for physicians. The idea that we're going to allow people to massage and sort of game the numbers is a real issue.
And if you start looking at the actual numbers of how dollars come into this, when someone
adds a diagnosis to a death certificate or a hospital discharge summary, that doesn't necessarily mean that they're doing anything wrong. But if a typical garden variety pneumonia without complications for a Medicare patient will be about $5,000. If you have COVID-19 pneumonia, it's about $13,000.
Wow.
And if you use a ventilator, it's $39,000. And these numbers come straight from CMS. Right there they are.
Wow, look at that.
The Chaska Republican admits he's a burr in the saddle to those in charge of Minnesota's COVID response. Now he's certain his opinions have put him on the radar of the state medical board.
I was notified by the Board of Medical Practice in Minnesota that I was being investigated. So I'm in the position where I have to explain that I wasn't spreading misinformation. I've got an 8-page document that I put together for the Board of Medical Practice. I also have some 70 pages of attachments. Folks, do I feel targeted? Yeah, I do.
Do you think maybe you overstepped by comparing flu to coronavirus and the rates of death and how the virus spread?
I do not. I cannot help but be reminded of the movie in Forrest Gump, where I think Forrest says, stupid is as stupid does. And that's what's going on here. Quite frankly, what do you want me to do? You want me to compare COVID-19 to syphilis or gonorrhea or tuberculosis or HIV or Ebola? I mean, come on. It's a single-stranded RNA virus. The symptoms of presentation are similar. The incubation periods might be somewhat different. The latency periods are still present for both. These are comparable. Dr. Fauci said in the New England Journal of Medicine that the COVID-19 disease is acting very much like an influenza outbreak. The bottom line is, whoever did submit the complaints against me, I think they picked the wrong guy. I can be a pit bull. I am a skeptic. I do a lot of reading, and I'm not backing off.
Amazing, right? I mean, not only is Scott Jensen a doctor, a practicing physician, who, by the way, I think was general doctor, family doctor of the year just a couple of years ago up in Minnesota. He's also a sitting senator, so he's involved in politics. The idea that someone like Scott Jensen, who is that qualified in so many different places, could come under attack certainly meant anybody could come under attack. Well, the medical board responded, and they have finally come with their judgment. I had an opportunity to sit down yesterday in the middle of Dr. Senator Scott Jensen's incredibly busy schedule. Here is the short interview that took place yesterday. Take a look at this. Dr. Scott Jensen, you were just on our show a couple of weeks ago, and at that moment, you were under review by the medical board for two issues. One, that you had made a comparison between the SARS-CoV-2 and flu, and also that you had discussed death certificates and that the new way that doctors were supposed to fill out death certificates could bloat the amount of people that died of COVID-19 when maybe it was really from other comorbidities. You have since been before the medical board. So what's the update? What's happened since we last spoke with you?
Well, thank you, Dale. On Monday, a couple of weeks ago, I received an email from the Board of Medical Practice indicating that they had completed their investigation and that they had dismissed both allegations. And in that email, they indicated I would be receiving an official letter, which I received a couple of days ago. And basically, they did a thorough review of the situation. They looked at my response and they dismissed both charges outright. And they never asked me to come down for an in-person meeting. I was gratified. Obviously, it was a burden on my shoulders. It feels like a weight being lifted. I had to, just yesterday, re-credential at one of the hospitals I have patients at. And while I was running through the credentialing process, one of the questions was, have you been investigated by the Board of Medical Practice in the last 3 years? And I have to confess, I flinched because nobody likes to have to answer yes to any of these questions. But
right.
It is what it is. So I said yes, and I explained the situation.
So now, is your response to the medical board, is that something that's public? Are we able to see it? Or does that have to remain private in the files?
It does not have to remain private. And I do have the opportunity to make my response public. The actual correspondence I received from the Board of Medical Practice was pretty scant. It was initially a two-page letter announcing that I was being investigated, and then the letter I received a couple of days ago was a one-page letter saying that the allegations had been dismissed. Perhaps the important document, though, was my 8-page response letter and 70 pages of attachments. And I did not want to release that to the public until I had received the official letter from the Board of Medical Practice. But now that I've received that, my intention is to release to the public my response along with the attachments.
Can we make that available to our audience that's watching today, or is this something you're going to put in a book?
That's a good question. Dale, you've been terrific, and I will definitely send it your way. If you want me to send it to Jeffrey and so that you can provide it, I will do that.
All right, so then let me let everyone know, just as always, when you're watching The High Wire, if there's something, some piece of peer-reviewed evidence or anything like that that you want to question or look deeper into, all you have to do right now is type in ICAN if you're on Facebook, if we're still on Facebook while you're watching this, or if you're on any other platform, including our now more robust thehighwire.com, text us at 33222. And this week, one of the things you'll receive is a link to those documents that Dr. Scott Jensen provided to the medical board defending his position on the allegations against him. Scott, what does this mean for other doctors? Of course, you were a part of America's Frontline Doctors Summit in front of the Supreme Court just 2 weeks ago. I'm calling it one of the greatest censorship events in the history of America. I think it was a cyber attack on truth. Of course, my YouTube channel came down, but more importantly, a dozen doctors stood in front of the Supreme Court, discussed the frontline approach to patients, a desire to get children back to school, a way forward from a medical perspective for the United States of America, how maybe we can end this lockdown. Some doctors are now under review from being a part of that. Simone Gold apparently has lost her position at the hospital she worked at. Those doctors really put it on the line. Are they talking to you? Are we going to be able to make sure that they hold on to their careers and don't come into medical review? How much interaction have you had with them since this massive censorship event took place?
Well, I was in touch with Dr. Simone Gold yesterday through texting and things like this, but right now, Dr. Gold has really been the adhesive, if you will, in this whole group, and she's just inundated. I've been in contact with Dr. Erickson out of California. So I think we're all trying to, if you will, gel together and try to help protect one another's interests, because, you know, we don't want them, the bureaucrats and the politicians and even the academic physician types, to be able to divide and conquer. We need to stay together with folks like you that are committed to getting the truth out, and to lots of other media sources that are willing to do this. So I think that the frontline doctors will definitely be circling the wagons to make sure that we protect our own.
What do you think this win for you against the medical board, will it have any effect on other doctors that have either stepped forward or intending to step forward? What do you see as the future for doctors that want to speak the truth under these outrageous circumstances?
I think the decision I made on July 5th to release a video telling the world that I was being investigated was the right one. It was uncomfortable because typically when you're being investigated by a board of medical practice, it doesn't feel good, and you might like to sort of hide it under the rug. But I think what happened is we had a very transparent, virtually global discussion. And I think some 20 million people watched my video and reached out.
Yeah.
And honestly, the responses were so robust, I couldn't keep up with them. Yeah. And I'm hoping that through that and through the release of the documents that I utilized to respond, that other physicians like Dr. Simone Gold will be able to tap into those and say, okay, this is a logical template that we should be able to utilize. It's really important that this discussion be transparent, not just on your show, Dell, but anywhere we can get it so that the people are looking at it. This is critical. Dr. Simone Gold had been in touch with me for probably about 10 days prior to that Monday-Tuesday White Coat Summit, and I simply was not able to fly out to D.C. and get there. And it was ironic that about 4 hours after I had participated with the America's Frontline Doctors in a press conference in a classroom situation, which I think is still available, 4 hours after that is when I got the email from the Minnesota Board of Medical Practice. I have been contacted by numerous physicians around the country and frankly around the world that have been in trouble because they've spoken, if you will, a contrarian narrative. We have got to stop this demonization and vilifying people that are speaking their opinion based on the facts that they perceive to be important. We are in a dangerous place here. Dr. Simone Gold's courage has got to be recognized. And yes. I hope to heck that what I've done and what I've gone through might help her further. But we've got to keep this transparent, because if we don't, I think you're going to see legacy media sources just basically shaping and framing the story the way they want.
It seems to me there is a real risk to all of the advancements in medicine and science that come from the scientific process, which involves constant surveillance, constant questioning, constant challenge to the paradigm the approaches that be. I was just talking to an ER doctor yesterday that said, you know, when a new drug is coming into our hospital, we sit down with, you know, doctors on all sides, and we talk about what we know to be the benefits that are being proclaimed for this drug and the side effects. Some of us maybe have used it, and we weigh in on, I'm having some questions about some of the side effects I may be seeing. There's a robust discussion where everybody is, you know, told to put all the information on the table. So as a hospital, we are watching this and seeing how it works and if we're going to continue using this product. He said, but now, under these circumstances, right now, certain drugs or products that some doctors are saying can work, we are not being allowed to either discuss it. There's no debate. There are people, you know, at risk of dying in ICUs, and yet we are being muzzled from the conversation that we are so used to having. Do you find that that is an accurate statement? Is the way that hospitals and doctors are usually treating new viruses or issues that are coming to the hospital and products that might be used, is there a difficulty to have open discussion right now?
I think your ER colleague is absolutely spot on. Medicine has changed. When I was going to tumor conferences and grand rounds in the 1980s, we didn't go to have a kumbaya moment where we patted one another on the back. We went to have that robust discussion where we had an exchange of ideas and experiences, and someone would raise this theoretical consideration or that theoretical consideration. We now have a fracture among physicians. We've got physicians who are tearing into other physicians for no particular reason. We have some specialists saying, well, you primary care doctors can't be prescribing that. Well, we're the ones who are in the trenches. We are the front line. An awful lot of patients can't get a hold of a specialist if their life depended on it. So we're the ones whose phone number is being given up by our answering service. So if I can't choose to use budesonide or dexamethasone or azithromycin or remdesivir or hydroxychloroquine, how are we going to learn and help our patients? Since when did patients get marginalized such that they don't get to have a say? I called a couple of pharmacists day before yesterday and said, if I write for hydroxychloroquine prescriptions for my patients, will you fill them? And they said, probably not. They said, we don't have to, and we would just feel that this might be setting a bad precedent. And I said, you've never done this to me before. If I wrote a prescription, as long as there was a drug that had been identified by the FDA as safe and it was off-label, you were prescribing. And the pharmacist just basically showed me, well, this is the world in which we live. And I think it's absolutely true.
You know, and it's amazing, actually, Scott. One of the things that scared me to death, and we reported on the high wire, is that the PrEP Act was passed in order to handle this epidemic. It's going to protect any vaccine maker on a level that not even the 1986 Vaccine Compensation Act protects the vaccine makers. I've been joking that under the PrEP Act, a doctor could basically shoot you and say, hey, we were just trying a new approach, and they would be protected by the PrEP Act, which has a robust protections under an emergency guideline situation, given that there's a pandemic, given that there aren't known tools, that doctors, you know, should be protected to be able to try whatever they think might work in an effort for, you know, doctors worldwide, but especially the United States of America, to maybe stumble upon or use some real research to get to a potential cure. I find myself saying, but wait a minute, this would be the benefit of the PrEP Act right now, isn't it? Isn't this why, you know, when, President Obama, you know, put this into the Affordable Care Act, it was a part of this whole idea that should we ever find ourselves in extreme circumstances, doctors need to be free to make choices. So, you know, at one moment I was only seeing the negative, now I'm seeing the positive. And pharmacies are keeping us from getting the benefits of what the PrEP Act was there for.
And one of the real underlying problems here is that if you look at where we are allowing some of these possible important medications to be used on COVID-19 patients, it's basically being in the hospital. Well, once you get in the hospital, you have basically another phase of disease. You are not in that mild to moderate group. You are now in that moderate to severe group. Where are we going to find if utilizing a drug early on would help keep a person from the hospital other than in the outpatient setting? What we've done is we've said, okay, hydroxychloroquine doesn't seem to have much benefit if it's used late in the game. But what we're hearing from many doctors around the world is earlier in the game, before a patient is hospitalized, this is where it seems to have real value. But we're saying, no, I shouldn't say we, I should say some of our bureaucrats are saying, no, we're not going to let you do any of those kinds of things. We're going to wait till the patient either gets well on their own or they get sick enough where they have to come to the hospital. And at that point in time, we'll bring them into the hospital. We'll be in charge. And that's maybe when we'll try hydroxychloroquine. And we are already aware of the fact that that does not appear to be the best time to use the drug. So it's an absolute catch-22, and it makes no sense.
Well, hopefully, Scott, because you've been vocal and you have survived the scrutiny of the medical establishment, you've put forward some really powerful statements, which our viewers are going to be able to read in defense of yourself. But also, I think you've used social media the way that it should be used, which is to reach out to the public and say, this is happening to me, and you need to know about it. I hope that other doctors have watched this process. Are you talking to doctors? Are they reaching out to you and saying, you know, asking for advice on how they should move forward? Can we expect more brave doctors stepping forward now that they've seen you make it through this gauntlet?
I think we can. I have been getting contacts from physicians every day. Some days, tens and tens of physicians contacting me. Some days it's just a smattering. I've talked to more physicians. I've been in contact with physicians from England, from a variety of European countries, from Austria, Wales, Scotland, Ireland. And I'm getting a lot of contacts from Minnesota physicians that want some help. And that's another reason why I am going to release the documents of my response, was because if my response can help other doctors respond, and once they look at it, say, oh, okay, this makes sense, hopefully they won't be quite so hesitant to speak out themselves, because we do have a division in our profession. We need to get back to, if you will, a more scientific perspective. We need to use the principles of Socratic teaching. We need to try to help identify the right questions and not just respond with angry answers. I still say, when we had the Diamond Princess, we had a perfect situation to learn a ton from. 17% of people got COVID-19. Why did not the other 83% get it? Or look at the Theodore Roosevelt aircraft carrier. We had out of 5,000 soldiers living in close quarters, 1,000 or a little less get the disease. Why did the other 4,000 not? We need to be asking these questions. Are there levels of immunity already present that we are not able to detect? Is it through disease resistance? Is it through T-cell cellular immunity? We just aren't as smart as we'd like to be. And the only way we're going to get smarter is to recognize that we aren't as smart as we need to be. You can't know what you don't know unless you start asking questions and reaching out.
Absolutely. And I think that that was the statement that was made by the frontline doctors so eloquently. We've got to be able to have debates on these topics. Lives are hanging in the balance. There is so much to be learned. You know, so many people talking about the unique qualities of this virus. So, Scott, I just want to be one of the first to really congratulate you on this win. I think you have won for medicine and the future of science. I know you are talking to many, many doctors and helping them move forward. I hope that, you know, you are bringing us into a new paradigm, but really it's bringing us back to the old paradigm of good science, good medicine, good quality challenges, and a constant understanding that as we modernize, we must revisit these questions and not be afraid to ask them. So, Scott, I appreciate your time. I appreciate everything you represent in this world today. You are not only a brilliant doctor, you're also a senator representing your people in the right way. I hope more of us are, you know, guided to, you know, understand what you are, what people like you represent, how you come across, and then we elect more people like you in this critical time. And as we go into future elections, I hope we get to clone you, Scott. Congratulations, and thank you for your time and your efforts.
Thank you, Dale. I very much appreciate it.
Take care.
If you like that clip, then be sure to check out our live broadcast of The High Wire every Thursday morning at 11 a.m. Pacific time. You can watch it on Facebook, iTunes, and Twitter. We'll see you there.
So what do you think about going from human 1.0 to human 2.0? And what does that mean? Well, going from humans as we now know ourselves to human 2.0 has something to do with transhumanism. If you're not familiar with that term, it's about taking humans as we know ourselves and melding with artificial intelligence. Kind of like being in The Matrix, if you've ever seen that movie. And that may seem kind of cool to you. We might have some superhuman abilities, maybe be able to think of something and it happens, maybe have some physical abilities that would be almost superhuman-like. That's the idea, that's what you see in sci-fi movies. And for myself, thinking about this topic, I'm like, well, I have some time. I think that's many years in the future. However, this question, this idea is now right in this moment. We need to make a decision. And I found out that we need to make a decision about this because I investigated the proposed COVID-19 vaccine. And this is my alarm call to the world. I looked at the pros and cons and it frightens me. And I want you to know about this. You need to be very well informed because this new vaccine is not like your normal flu vaccine. This is something very different. This is something brand new. This is something completely experimental on the human race. And it's not just about being a different vaccine. There are technologies that are being introduced with this vaccine that can change the way we live, who we are, and what we are, and very quickly. I think that, you know, some people that you might know these names, Elon Musk, who is the founder of SpaceX and Tesla Automotive, as well as Ray Kurzweil, who is one of the big wigs of Google. These are self-proclaimed transhumanists. They believe that we should go to human 2.0, and they are very big proponents of this. There's a lot of other people that you might know their names. They're also involved with this, so you should look that up. I think the easiest way to explain this to you is to go with one of the front runners for the vaccine and go into a little bit of the history and tell you how they want to make the vaccine. And I think that will speak volumes. So for instance, Moderna is one of the front runners for the COVID-19 vaccine. You should know that Moderna was founded by a person from Harvard, Derek Rossi, and this researcher actually was successful in taking some modified RNA and being able to reprogram a stem cell in the body and change the function of the stem cell. He actually made it genetically modified, okay? So you can, he proved that you can genetically modify something by using modified RNA. So they founded the company Moderna on this concept. It's kind of a new kid on the block, okay? It's not been around that long. In fact, it hasn't even made any vaccine for a human before. It's made no medicine for a human before. This will be their first run. You must know that Moderna was in the news recently because it really fast-tracked. It's like the other companies, it's fast-tracking the vaccine. It's going from phase one to phase two very, very quickly. In fact, it's gone from phase one to phase three in its experiments from March of this year until currently. I mean, that is unbelievable. It usually takes 5 or 6 years. How are they able to do this with the safety and efficacy data that we need? And I want you to know that in phase two, they're only using between 30 and 45 humans. In Moderna's test study, they only used 45 humans. And with the high dose vaccine group, they got 100% of those people got systemic side effects, 100. That's only in the short side effect profile. In the low dose vaccine, 80% got systemic side effects. Now, we don't even know the long-term side effects from that. We would need a lot longer time, right? Maybe years. But we do know, based on previous animal studies of using this technology, that you can expect possibly increased cancer rates, increased mutant genes, mutagenesis, also increased autoimmune reactions. For instance, in some of the ferret studies, they saw that when the ferret was introduced to the virus that they were trying to protect the ferret from after the ferret got the vaccine, they actually had an exaggerated immune response. It actually hurt the ferret. They had more lung inflammation, more lung fluid, even some problems with their liver. It actually hurt them. They had a poorer response. Okay, so those are longer term reactions, and that could be seen with this vaccine, but we don't know the data yet. So it's not without risk. And how are they doing this? Well, they're actually suggesting to use a platform. Let me just explain how they would administer the vaccine. So the vaccine, there's an idea called microneedle platform, okay? This was developed by MIT. And they said it could be very easily produced, okay, and mass produced. This is why they're proposing this technology, and many millions of vaccines could be made quickly. They could also be administered by yourself. So the idea is to get a Band-Aid. It looks like a Band-Aid you buy in the drugstore. It's shipped to you through Amazon or UPS or some other shipping service. You take it out of the package, you put it on your hand like this, and then you take the sticker off and voila, you've been vaccinated. So how is that possible? Well, in this Band-Aid, it has little tiny spicules, little tiny needles. And this was designed after a snake viper fang bite, okay? Or snake viper bangs. So little snake bites. Anyway, in these tiny little spicules, they claim you won't really feel it that much. There's their little hydrogel. It's a material called hydrogel. Inside the hydrogel would be a luciferase enzyme as well as the vaccine itself. Okay, so what is all that? So first of all, you're getting the vaccine. It's modified RNA or modified DNA. Let's take Moderna, modified RNA. So in that modified RNA, the idea is that the microneedles will puncture into your cell membrane, okay? And this synthetic piece of an RNA, it's a code for the part of the virus, or they could use a synthetic DNA to code for the part of the virus, would go into your nucleus, your body would start transcribing it, would start reading it, and making more of that part of the virus. Well, why would we want to make more of the virus or part of the virus? The idea is your body would get used to seeing it, would know how to make antibodies, and would have an improved T cell response. And the idea is then when you saw it in the future, your body would already know how to fight it and it would be a better response. That's the idea. The problem with that is they're using something called a process called transfection. And transfection is a way that we make genetically modified organisms. Okay, I think you know about those fruits and vegetables. They're not as healthy as the normal wild type fruit and vegetable. So possibly you could extrapolate that to a human. If we become genetically modified, we would not be as healthy, okay? We don't have long-term studies on this anyway. This is unbelievable. And, you know, the vaccine manufacturers have made the statement, this will not alter our DNA, our genome. I say that is not true. Because if we use this process to make a genetically modified organism, why would it not do the same thing to a human? I don't know why they're saying that. Now, if you look at the definition of transfection, it'll tell you that it can be a temporary change in the cell. And I think that's what the vaccine manufacturers are banking on. It's temporary. Or it's a possibility for it to become stable, to be taken up into the genome, and so stable that it will start replicating when the genome replicates, meaning it is now a permanent part of your genome. That's a chance that we're taking. So it could be temporary or it could be permanent. And we would never know that for years down the road, honestly. So here we go. We've got something that can alter our genome. It's a possibility. And another thing on that, if they're altering the genome, what would be the effects? I told you previously some of the side effects, but also we need to know that this is a synthetic piece of DNA or RNA, okay? And if it becomes taken up into the genome of a human, it's synthetic, it's not from nature. And if you look at the Supreme Court justice ruling on synthetic DNA or genes, it can be patented, and patents have owners. So what does that mean for us? What if this gets into our genome? Does that mean Moderna or the Bill and Melinda Gates Foundation or the Department of Defense, all of these people who are involved in the patents, or are they somehow going to own part of our genome? It's a possibility. You need to know that. So that's one part of this delivery system, just one. Now let me go to the next. The next part of the delivery system is a luciferase enzyme. Okay, they named it, they patented luciferase. I don't like that name. Luciferase because it has bioluminescent qualities, which means it can produce a light or it has a light source. And all of this would be under your skin and you cannot see it. Now, the luciferase is an idea because they want to make sure that you're vaccinated. They don't trust medical records. They don't trust you saying that you got vaccinated. They want to make sure, and they want to make sure it was successful. A successful transfection, a successful gene modification. So when you get the luciferase enzyme, if you have an iPhone or a special app on the iPhone, you can scan over that area and it will give a digital code, a digital imprint, a digital pattern, something that will identify that you were vaccinated. It holds your vaccination record. It also gives you an ID, a number, a barcode, a branding, whatever you want to call it, a tattoo, it's all the same thing. You now become like a product. So we have that. Now the third thing I mentioned was hydrogel. So hydrogel is actually an invention from DARPA, the Department of Advanced Research Projects Agency. This is kind of a sci-fi kind of a group from the Department of Defense, Pentagon, of the US government. They make these fantastic inventions. So one of them is hydrogel. Hydrogel, you can YouTube, look on YouTube, look at Profusa is one of the companies, DARPA, as well as hydrogel, and you'll find some little 2-minute clips that they describe. So hydrogel is nanotechnology, microscopic little robots. And these little robots, actually, I know it sounds crazy, it's still crazy to me, but it's possible, okay? They can disassemble, reassemble, assemble into and make different things. So with this hydrogel, it's really nanotechnology. So that's something you know, robotic or something that's artificial intelligence. It has the ability to connect with artificial intelligence. So this means that a human can now connect to directly and gather information from our bodies and gather it and connect with your smartphone, with the cloud, with some other smart device. And once this is done, this is 24 hours a day, 7 days a week, 365 days a year. Think about that. Think about how immediately that could change our privacy, immediately can change our autonomy, immediately change our freedoms. This can gather data like your blood sugar, your oxygen, your blood pressure. Okay, those sound great. But it also can gather many other things. It can gather, they say, your emotions or your menstrual cycle, your activity, if you've fallen, your nutrients in your body, if you took medicines. It's a potential to see if you took illicit drugs. It's got a potential to see almost anything that goes on in your body. And all of this information is going where? That has not been addressed. Who's protecting this information? What are they using it for? This is really serious stuff, guys. This is all being proposed to being unveiled in the next vaccine, okay? The other thing to know is with this nanotechnology, hydrogel, artificial intelligence, you know, hookup, just like your cell phone, you can send a text message, you can send an email, but also you can receive them back. So that means we could receive information. What information would be coming back into us? Would it affect our mood, our behavior? Would it affect, you know, how we think or our memories? If you haven't watched the movie Matrix, I think you should. I think there's some truths in that, in that movie. I see so many wrong things with this vaccine. And I see that we are not talking about it in the major media. And I see that, I feel that these companies are outright lying to us when they say they cannot affect our DNA. Because by all definitions that they are using, this can affect our DNA. So guys, I wanted to make this video short because I wanted to get the point across. I wanted you to really do your own research. So know that there are many risks that we're seeing here, and there is some, we really need to know if we really want to go from human 1.0 to human 2.0. And let me also tell you that there's some major names behind these vaccines. You're always going to see like the Department of Defense from the US government, sometimes DARPA, like I told you. Why is the military involved with our vaccines? You see the Bill and Melinda Gates Foundation everywhere with this. If you look, you'll find that name almost always. And let's go back to the Bill and Melinda Gates Foundation. I want you to look up what, let's look at the track record. Let's look at what the man stands for. His family comes from a family of eugenics. What does eugenics mean? Population control, meaning there's too many people on the planet. That's important to know. He's been on video stating that he thinks with a very good new vaccine, we could get the Earth's population to be decreased by 10 to 15%. Well, who's going to stay and who's going to go? And who is he to decide? He doesn't have a medical background, no epidemiology background, no science background. He's not a doctor, software tech. That's what he has. I'd also like you to realize, I always look at who's has a vested interest. What are their motivations? What is his motivation, right? We already know his family background. Well, what's very concerning to me is that DARPA, this military agency, as well as the Bill and Melinda Gates Foundation, is very interested in something called gene drive research or technology, or gene extinction technology. And it's exactly what it sounds like. By using genetic mutations, by use of transfection, for instance, you can exterminate an entire species from the planet. They are proposing to use this for mosquitoes, for instance, in Africa. But guys, our world is a delicate ecosystem. Who is saying one species goes? You destroy one species, you could affect an entire ecosystem. So when you exterminate an entire species, you will affect an entire ecosystem. It's a very delicate balance. And who's to say who's going to stay and who's going to go? Who's got that knowledge? Why aren't we talking about this? And guys, if we can do it to an insect, we can do it to an animal, we can do it to a human. I bring this up because if these agencies that are behind the vaccine also stand for that, do you trust them with your health? Do you trust them with your family? Do you trust them with our children? The other thing is we're rushing this to production. What is the motivation behind that? We need to really think about this. I've also stated in the past that we need to know that there are, at least in the United States, there are mandates passed that make the vaccine manufacturers have no liability, zero liability for any harm done to any human. If people are killed, if they're hurt, if they're paralyzed, if they're maimed for life, it doesn't matter. You have no recourse and they still make all their profit. So there's no incentive for them to make it safe anyway. I also want you to know that one of the mandates, the Emergency Preparedness Act, that says they can force a vaccine on us. They cannot force a vaccine if there is a viable treatment for the COVID-19. And I want you to know that doctors around the world are being censored about treatment options for COVID-19 or prevention for COVID-19. Because if there's a true treatment or prevention, then they can't force this vaccine on us. I want to bring that up because what in the world is the motivation of doing this? Is it really in the health of all of us? As a doctor, I can't see how this is in the true health of the entire world. I think there's another motive, another agenda going on. The more I look at this, the more that comes up. So I'll leave you with this. I want to make this short and sweet, so that you can digest this and think about it. Do you really want to go to human 2.0? I don't think it's the fantasy you see in the movies. We need to come together and we need to unify our voices because people in positions of power taking care of our health are not in our best interest. But together we have power. Together, united, our voice is strong. So I encourage you to do critical thinking, do your own research, join groups in your state, go to your state legislature, and you tell them no. No to these experiments on humans. No to invasion of privacy. No to censorship. We are sovereign human souls, and we need to take our rights back. Thank you for listening. And you know, I always say my videos with the greatest of love and the greatest of peace. Thank you.
Outlaw tobacco and cigarettes, processed sugars. My name is Dr. Tamper. I'm in private practice. My name is Dr. Tamper. I'm in private practice in Omaha, Nebraska. I don't wear a mask. I see over 200 patients a week. I come in close proximity with every patient that I come across. Why haven't I contracted this so-called disease? Americans make up 5% of the world population, but yet we take in 65 to 70% of the world's pharmaceutical drugs. We are one of two countries that allows pharmaceutical advertisements on the television. But yet 80% of Americans are suffering with a chronic disease associated with poor lifestyle choices. 700,000 people will die of heart disease this year alone.
Doctor, please bring yourself in order.
600,000 people will die of cancer. 300,000 people will die of obesity this year. When is enough enough? If this is truly about health, then mandate healthy living, exercise, good food choices, chiropractic, outlaw tobacco and cigarettes, processed sugars. I believe it was Thomas Jefferson who stated, if people let the government decide what foods they eat and what medicines they take, their bodies will soon be in a sorry state as those souls who live under tyranny. You see, God made your body self-healing, self-regulating. If you give the body what it needs, it can be healthy. It is like the wilted plant that sits under the sun. An allopathic model to that is to shield the sun, to protect that plant against the sun, cut off its leaves, medicate or vaccinate that plant. But an epigenetic approach, a wellness approach, is to give that plant water, and it can be well. You see, your body is no different. We must eat well, move well, think well, and we can be well. In other words, your level of health is the genetic expression of your lifestyle choices. And I know full well that your body's ability to heal itself, to overcome disease and circumstances like corona, is far greater than anyone has ever permitted you to believe. Benjamin Rush, a signer of the Declaration of Independence, stated, unless we put medical freedom into the Constitution, a time will come when medicine will organize into an undercover dictatorship to restrict the art of healing to one class of men and deny equal privileges to others. That time is now. These masks have absolutely nothing to do with health, but everything to do with the complying with a false flag, tyrannical agenda. If we sacrifice our precious freedoms for temporary security, we will lose both. If you can't comprehend that statement, if you are blind to this agenda, then I am sorry. You have the eyesight of an eagle, but the vision of a clam.
The City Council unanimously voted in favor of face coverings after hours of debate between medical experts, city leaders, and Omaha residents. Reporter Ken Lutzen was at the meeting and has more on what the mandate means for the public.
Please do not touch me and do not touch my stuff.
It was a heated and lengthy discussion, some even being asked to leave the city chambers.
Every single one of you are on notice. You are violating our unalienable rights.
After hours of back and forth, the city council voted 7-0 to issue an emergency mask ordinance to slow the spread of COVID-19 in Omaha. But as Councilwoman Amy Melton says, this decision did not come without pressure.
We were told that OPS would not open without the mandate. We were rather shocked to see that they were going remote on Friday.
The ordinance goes into effect immediately, meaning residents older than 5 years of age will now have to wear masks inside public spaces like schools and businesses until September 15th. For not wearing a mask, you will be cited $25, down from the $100 in the original ordinance that was amended by City Council. There are some exceptions as well. Mask use is not mandatory for those with a disability or medical condition. Masks aren't required when eating and drinking in restaurants, working out in a gym, and visiting government offices. But even with the infectious disease doctor's expertise and amendments to this ordinance, the debate on this pandemic and masks continues.
What would Jesus do? And I believe this time he would tell us, do not be afraid and love thy neighbor. Now, may I just say, this is the quintessential time to show our brothers and sisters in Christ that we love one another by wearing these masks.
You know, this mask thing is not a good thing, and I don't think we need a mandate. Real leadership would be an invitation to let's make America great again.
Well, the ordinance also encourages Dr. Adi Poor to give weekly updates on COVID-19 numbers.
Zapata, I wasn't going to speak. I was asked to speak here, you know. Sheriff, good to see you. I'm telling you guys, you know, I'm pretty appalled at what's going on. You know, at first we sat as concerned citizens, and we all wanted to figure out how to best navigate our way through this whole COVID thing, you know. And as we realized that it's not quite as dangerous as we thought it'd be, you know, I was absolutely appalled at the cowardice, you know. And as you're sitting there with your masks on, I don't blame you for wearing masks, because I'd be hiding my face too if I was you for what you're doing. This is absolutely horrendous what you're doing to these people. I'm a business owner, and I'm telling you, our families are starving. You know, you guys can sit here with your jobs, you can sit here and you're going to get paid, you can fall asleep in your chair like that gentleman's doing behind his mask right there, okay? And I'm telling you right now, that right now we're being peaceful. And you better be happy that we're good citizens, that we're peaceful citizens. But it's not going to be peaceful much longer, okay? And this isn't a threat. I'm not a criminal. I've never been a criminal. But I'm telling you, good citizens are going to turn into real concerned and revolutionary citizens real soon. And nobody else is going to say that. I'm probably the only person that has the balls to say what I'm saying right now. That we're building, we're organizing, and we'll work with law enforcement or without law enforcement. But you won't stop us when time comes, because our families are starving. And if you don't hear the seriousness of my voice, I hope you open your ears and you absolutely listen to what I'm saying. Because this is a warning for what's coming. It's not going to be peaceful much longer. It's not going to be rah-rah. It's not going to be speeches. It's not going to be gathered outside saying a Pledge of Allegiance. It's not going to be waving flags. It's going to be real. When you've seen the things that I've seen, I went to war for this country. I've seen the ugliest, dirtiest part of humanity. I've been in combat, and I never want to go back again. But I'm telling you what, I will to save this country. If it has to be against our own citizens, it will happen. And there's a million people like me, and you won't stop us. Open the county. Let our citizens do what they need to do. Let owners of businesses do what they need to do to feed their families. Take the masks off. Quit masking and muzzling your children. The psychological damage you're doing to them is horrible. I've had 6 friends kill themselves since it's happened. Veterans who lost their jobs. How do you feel about being complicit in perpetuating that? The greatest hoax ever perpetuated on the American people. And you're a part of it by wearing your masks. In Shasta County, we're supposed to be red country up here. Not blue country, we're red country up here. You guys know that. You claim to be conservatives, maybe you're not, maybe you're liberals, I don't know. But by God, we're Americans, and remember that. Take your masks off, quit muzzling yourselves. Join us, fight with us against what's going on in Sacramento. It's a travesty. Thanks.